If one more label try to stop me, it'll be another label wish they wouldn't sign me. You don't want no problems, with no problems with me. You don't want no problems, with no problems with me. Just another day, another song, and another show. Up on stage in the crowd, be like, let's go. You don't want no problems, with no problems with me. You don't want no problems, with no problems with me. Just another day, another song, and another show. Up on stage in the crowd, be like, let's go. I be grinding, writing songs, doing gigs in the studio, recording every day. That's how it is. Two jobs a day, all night, don't sleep. Got a show, hit the crib, change clothes. That's how it be. Life of an artist, trying to get signed, yo. Ain't gonna let no label rob me of the shine, yo. Not me, yo. You can keep those contracts, that's what I need, yo. You don't want no problems, no problems with me. You don't want no problems, no problems with me. Just another day, another song, and another show. Walk up on the stage and the crowd be like, this is yo. You don't want no problems, no problems with me. You don't want no problems, no problems with me.
Well, what's good, y'all? Welcome to an IAG exclusive experience. I just wanted to kind of come to you with the thought process of today's show being Enough is Enough. I say this is a special edition for, it is not only one during quarantine, but it is a, you know, quarantine of COVID-19, but it is one under duress and racial injustice. This show will be a little bit different as it is more of an uncut look into what is transpiring as an outcry to George Floyd's murder, Breonna Taylor, Tony McDad, David McAtee, aka Mr. Barbecue Man, and the many more that are countless, and the harmed and unnamed protesters. So first and foremost, I just wanted to simply do kind of is what I've been learning to do, which is called a temperature check, to just check in to see how we are feeling. And I encourage all of us that can be a round tree experience. I don't mind going last for sure. But just talking about coping mechanisms and like, what are you doing? How are you feeling? And so I'll start with Bevan. If you feel like sharing.
Y'all know how I feel. I'm tired. I'm emotionally, mentally just drained. I feel an overwhelming amount of sadness and disgust. But then at the same time, the soft side of my heart wants to feel slightly empathetic for those that are in a negative situation where they feel like they can't have a voice. So I'm just, enough is enough. Like, we need change on a monumental level, and it's so unfortunate that all of these people have lost their lives, but it seems like just the way in which George was murdered has been the catalyst for what I can only hope to be change, real change, not fake change.
Yeah, I feel similarly. Similarly, like, or at least I empathize with how Bevan feels. Just like Ahmaud Arbery, which wasn't long ago at all. You know, it took me several days before I watched the video. Just because I was in one way tired of it, tired of, you know, same sort of story. As far as how I'm coping, it's like I'm used to it, which is sort of a sad thing. I'm, you know, I'm tired of hearing about it, but it never surprises me now when I do. Seeing the video in this case with the man dying, with George Floyd dying, it was hard to watch, you know, to see the life leave his body. I think that touched a lot more people because it was a close-up shot. You could see his face, and I think it hit harder in that sense. But just the story itself, I'm accustomed to seeing that. I'm accustomed to hearing that. You know, and I know what happens. I know it goes on. Mm-hmm. I am glad, though, that there are other people that have been disturbed by it. I'm seeing a lot of white people that talk about it and are, you know, upset with what's going on, and they are joining in on trying to bring about change, you know, to the excessive use of force by police, in a sense, and also is bringing attention to just how Black people are treated in America in general. So I'm really hoping that we can capitalize on this moment and start to focus on things we can do to bring about real change. Yeah, so I mean, that's where I'm at this point.
Torin?
Yeah, you know, the feeling of, you know, how you feel during all this, it is a mixed bag of emotions. Some days, you know, first day you're angry, you're upset, you want to throw the shits over, and some days you're annoyed, just as easy as, you know, conversations with coworkers, particularly white colleagues. You know, that can get a little frustrating at times. So it's just, you're hurt, you're upset. You see things and see people uniting, then you're grateful, you're thankful, you know, progress and just, you see organizations starting to happen, you see organization, you know, brewing and beginning. So I believe it's a long fight for us, and we need to get whatever we can out of this movement. You know, this is becoming globally recognized. And this is our time to make sure that, you know, we can capitalize on what we need as a Black community through this.
Absolutely. Tyrell, can you hear me, hon?
Yes, I can.
Okay. So I'm going to introduce Ty real quickly. Ty, you're 18, right? 17
in August.
And Ty is part of the music department. Well, I'll say the music group surrounding like Beat Zone and putting things into purpose by your words and putting it to music and recording it and things of that nature by way of Deanna Hawkins. So I think Ty had a video. Might have been yesterday. Did you go live yesterday, Ty?
Yeah, it was yesterday. I went live yesterday, basically explaining why using methods such as the Blackout Tuesday and stuff like that isn't as effective as doing something like, for example, I said in the live video on Newsday Tuesday, where instead of blacking out people's timelines and feeds, so whereas the people can't see anything at all, they can't get any new information. We take Tuesdays to give us pieces of critical information, or try to get stuff out there that normally isn't out there in any other day. That's why I feel as though that's what my whole concern was, and that's why I made the live video, and also sprouted because I was starting to see a bigger picture I saw something on Twitter. What I saw on Twitter was a white person who didn't support us, didn't support our movement. He went on there saying, yeah, I'm lucky that this Blackout Tuesday started, because now we don't have to see this stuff anymore, and it could be pushed out for a day. Hopefully, if this trend continues, that we won't see it at all. And that's the point that I was trying to address. People don't realize it, but in a way, doing Blackout Tuesday doesn't give off much as a it doesn't give an effective message as much as, say, for example, like I said, a Newsday Tuesday, or doing something more thoughtful that can get, not thoughtful, but more effective, that can get a that can get your message across more clear in a more efficient way. The Blackout Tuesday was just really a, yeah, we're together, yeah, we're doing all this together, and I respect the intent behind it, and I support the intent behind it. It's just the execution isn't as effective as some other alternatives.
Right. I agree with you completely.
I agree, but then on the second note, I kind of disagree, because I think it was not effective because people didn't follow directions.
And yeah, it wasn't was something that I was also
and I think that just comes down to people hopping on something just to be hopping on and not doing their due diligence and not researching. Because if you actually saw what the if they actually read what the purpose of Blackout Tuesday was, it wasn't just, oh, put your screen black and don't post for the day. That was not the purpose at all. The purpose of Blackout Tuesday was to not bring attention. We're not doing selfies today. Yeah, we're not doing
the blackout, all the
pictures. Right. We are exclusively posting about our injustices, or if we're not posting about our injustices, we are posting things that are positive and uplifting towards our community. So yeah. I think people just didn't read. Reading is fundamental, people.
Like, that's why
didn't follow directions. Yeah.
And this brings me to the more overall topic that I wanted to address as well, which is like, when we do stuff like protests and the peaceful protests, and I'm not necessarily saying I'm condoning it, but when we do riots, we need to make sure we have a plan behind what we're doing. And we're not doing it senselessly, because stuff like this can happen where, so it's more, and that was a more controversial thing where, so people would think, okay, it's helping, or it's not doing anything at all. Like, for example, the protest, if we had a more solid plan, or like if we came together and we did it, well, not, I'm not trying to make it seem like these protests aren't working or they're not effective. They are working. They are effective. They are very good for us. But what I'm saying, my necessary problem with it was how the looting and rioting and the doing stuff like that even started. And then it just turned from a global thing, like, everybody standing together and we're fighting for this injustice. It turned into like some people using this for individual gain. I need this at the house, so I'm gonna use this
right.
Right. Target.
I think
it's opportunity.
Not to cut anybody off, I want us to be able to streamline everything, and so that is a conversational piece we have a little bit later. But right now, I just wanted us to simply touch on. Just a check of a temperature check, right? And so the reason why I was asking everyone before we kind of got off a little tangent real quickly, which is still valid, but I wanted us to have a little bit of structure in how we address all of these issues, because they're all in separate categories. And that was one of the things that I was able to kind of dial back and realize. When I did the temperature check, I found that just like everyone that I heard speaking thus far, members of specific, you know, the founding members of IAG, Torian, DJ Trev, and Bevan, they were kind of, you know, expressing their confusion, frustration, mental drainage surrounding the whole circumstance. And the reason why this idea of kind of like this town hall for creatives was kind of the inception point of that came from going to protest. And I protested because at the time, I was just sitting around watching news circuit, junket this, scrolling through Instagram, checking things on Twitter. Oh my God, you just being flabbergasted about how much stuff I started to find and see. And I was like, man, this is historical. And you know, why am I just solely why am I just solely watching from a distance or watching from afar? And so the temperature of things for me changed drastically once I went down on Monday to protest, and I chose to bring, you know, like my play nephew Rashad, because I felt like this was a historical moment that he could partake in. At the same token, I felt that by Monday, things would have been more calm. And I was completely wrong. Why was I wrong? I was wrong in two regards. One was that things actually were calm. We had no problems getting down to Pennsylvania Avenue whatsoever by way of the Uber, Lyft, rideshare experience. We were there before curfew, which was at 7 o'clock on Monday. You know, you saw, as you started walking, you literally saw the graffiti of F Trump, F12, BLM, Black Lives Matter. I mean, like, buildings, historical buildings are all forms of tattooed up. And so I was like, wow, this is kind of crazy, but it's okay though. You know, things are still calm. Let's go to the White House. There's nothing crazy happening at the White House right now. And I remember Rashad saying, I want to see the action. Well, sometimes you got to be careful with what you pay, what you ask God for, because we were there right at 6:20. The curfew was 7 p.m., right? At 6:20, the Secret Service were in riot gear, standing outside. There were MPD officers on the bike, just chilling. Didn't seem, I didn't feel like any harm foul was going to be done whatsoever. And then as we were walking closer to the White House, there were a couple of people that said, hey guys, I think you might want to turn around. It looks like they're putting on their face masks. So I was just like, well, what do you mean face mask? You know, maybe, you know, people were speculating. I don't know if they're, you know, tear gas is coming or not. Well, we're just on the corner, perfectly fine, nothing wrong. And, you know, you're hearing people chanting, you know, no justice, no peace. And then out of the blue, these men from Lafayette Plaza, you know, show up, start pushing the crowd out, and then they recede and come right back in. And the part that was really, really interesting out of all of that was that probably 5 minutes later, there was this kind of explosion that happened. And literally out of nowhere, it was run. It was fight or flight. And there was, the only thing we could do was flight at that point. And it was just overwhelming, because it's kind of like in a split moment second, it went from peaceful to it's a militia, you know, like it's a video game out here. And, you know, we had to run several times. And so just from that experience alone, I had a different form of energy that exuded that really wasn't there before. Because now to find out, you know, it took us almost an hour to get away from the White House arena, 5 to 6 block radius of all of a sudden these barricades, streets blocked off that were not blocked off whatsoever, only to find out that this person that holds a level of leadership wanted to do a photo op in the midst of all of these people. I mean, there were kids, there were animals, there were dogs, there were all types of people that were there, and that was very peaceful. So my temperature check was kind of like you all's. I was just all over the place. And I was like, I want to talk about this right now. I want to talk about this right now. I wanted to do this on yesterday, but I was exhausted, like just mentally exhausted. And I feel like that is the overall arching thought process behind being exhausted. So for those who actually decided to protest, I know Torian, you protested on Sunday. What enticed you to go and protest?
Just on a whim, just, you know, a little restless, and just decided to go down there, meet my coworker, go down there, and we had the job, really, and just start walking. and, you know, see what movement, what, because you kind of sit and you're just like, well, what can I do? And the funniest thing, I get, you know, the take back from it, you get down there and it's more white people than, or non-black rather, than it is black.
Right.
And they're holding their Black Lives Matter signs and marching on. And, you know, and then I drive home and, you know, left at a curfew, you know, before any curfews and stuff, you know, by the time, before those are in place. And I drive home and the line of to get to the wharf for crab legs were black people. And I kind of just laughed. I laughed, but it's like, I'm not mad at them. Black people are tired. People are tired. It's time for white people to step up and do non-black people to step up. George Floyd, he's not the first. He wasn't the first. Like we've gone through these. We've gone through these series of things. So if it's time, you know, black people are tired. And if white people want to get out there and, you know, do the Black Lives Matter, and, you know, if they outnumber, you know, the blacks in the protests, I can't be mad at it, you know? And I'm just like, at the end of the day, people do what they do. And I know we talked, we went a little bit into Black Tuesday, but I know, Sharice, we might touch on that a little bit later. But I had some thoughts and some just my take on that was a little bit different than, you know, than others. But I could save it for later, or I could just interject now. But it's just like, you know, just people are tired and you want to figure out what you can do, and you just do your best. Do your best to what you can to help people out and to what you can. If voting is it, then vote. If protesting is it, then protest. You know, do what you can. If it's supporting the protesters, and that's what I ended up doing Sunday. I went did that Saturday, and then Sunday I was like, they said they needed Black Lives Matter DC, so they needed a tent, some water, you know, went down there. I was like, I got this stuff. Let me, you know, just pack it up in the car. Let me go down there. They had, by the time I got there, they had tons of stuff, but they didn't need the tent. But it's just like, just do what you can. And that's at the end of the day. Protest, if you want to protest, if it's in your heart, if it's, you know, vote, definitely. That should be in everybody's heart. And just do what you can to support protesters. And I felt like that my take on Black Tuesday was shut social media off, but people started posting stuff about voting. People started posting stuff about places you can research and figure out where you can organize and where you can, you know, make a difference. So I had a different take. It was kind of like, pause on everything else. I don't need to see any pictures of you, no selfies. I don't need to see any of that. Pause on that. Take a pause from what was the slogan? The pause from the show. Take a pause from all of that.
Mm-hmm.
People started posting real shit. Like, they started posting things that really made a difference, and things that, for me, I'm like, all right, well, what do I need to do? Like, where can I go? It gave me time to take a step back and research and figure out what, you know, Black Lives Matter DC, wasn't following them before. Let me follow them. Let me see what they need. Where I can support in any manner. They're out there protesting. At least I can do is support them in some type of manner. So that's like, at the end of the day, black people are tired. Do what you can, do what you do, vote. And that's, you know, whatever you're doing to make a difference is sure as hell fun right now. And we just gotta keep pushing though. We gotta keep, this is bigger than these cops.
Right, absolutely, thank you for sharing. So I don't know if anybody else outside myself and Torian had the opportunity to go and to actually protest. Did anybody else have a chance to do so at all?
No, I'm not going to lie. Protesting is not my ministry. It's just, I have a fear of large groups. The sounds are triggering for me. That's just too much for me mentally to take in. So for me to do a protest in that manner, just knowing that it's going to start peaceful and then it's going to turn to shit, I just can't set myself up that way, because it's going to take me too long to recover. So, I mean, for all those that do, more power to you. I support you 100%. I will do a call out for you at work if you need. I will do anything to support you, but I just can't go out there. That's not my calling.
And you know, like, historically, when you look back to the Civil Rights Movement, it was students that were primarily pushing that movement as far as being on, you know, on the ground, in the streets, conducting the protests. And even when things went awry and started rioting, it was the students. That's just to go to say that there are different roles for different people as far as where you are in your life, you know? And so just like Torian just spoke on, she was on the ground, but in a supportive role more than being there to, you know, to yell, to scream Black Lives Matter and so forth. Protesters need those tents. They need the water. There's also another role for folks where, you know, I'm exceeding my days of going out to be actively protesting on the ground. So now I'm looking for what other roles can I fill, which is definitely in the support, the funding. And that just happens. I think it's a natural part of life where as you get older, you got more to lose. When you're looking at students, they're getting their life started. They're not thinking of those kinds of things like down the road and so forth. And it's not as important as what's going on to them right then and there. But as you get older, you got a family, you got kids, you know, you got more people and more things depending on you. You have to think twice before you go out there. And then particularly in this environment, I do think that there may have been, it could go two ways, where with COVID-19 still a concern on a lot of people's minds, especially knowing that it impacts Black people, has been impacting and hitting the Black community harder. You got people that are thinking of that and are like, nah, I don't want to go. Even young folks thinking, hey, I don't want to go and then bring it back home because it's still a risk there. So that's a factor going on. But also contributing to the number of people that we've seen out in the streets doing protests, I think COVID contributed to that as well. Whereas you got a lot of people that, you know, may, if they were working, or if they had other things to do in the morning, or they were, you know, other places were open where they could go and so forth, I think a good number of those people may not have shown up. But either way, I think we gotta capitalize on the opportunity that's here. Sometimes, you know, things work in a way that it just creates the perfect opportunity to take advantage of or capitalize on what's happening. And I think this is one of those moments. And we just gotta, you know, focus. I like what the young man was saying, Ty, just on, you know, the thoughts of how to better plan and have a goal in mind and think about how we're gonna organize people to get our point, drive our point home and actually enact some change. Think about how we're gonna protest and what impact that's gonna have. So
yeah, that's also what I was saying when I was on live yesterday, is that I want to protest like I really do. And if it wasn't for the pandemic and wasn't what's going on right now, I would be the first person out there, because like rubber bullet wounds, stuff like that, that stuff is going to heal with time. What was not going to heal with time is, like, for example, I have asthma and it flares up really bad randomly. Like at the beginning of this year, I had an asthma attack, and like I have like really bad lung pain sometimes. So it's like, I don't want this respiratory disease to affect my lungs while I already have asthma, and then it can lead to something way more dangerous than just a simple, like, I have to be in a hospital and I have to be quarantined away from other people. I could possibly be seriously injured, if not die. And plus, I also have elder family members that I always see. My mother, I live with my mother and my father. It's a full house here, so I don't want to have it and put myself in danger and put everybody else in here in danger. But if this wasn't going on, I would honestly really be right there with everybody else, because I feel that message that we have to, that everybody has a role to play. And I feel like those things, we're young and we have the energy and we're like the youth and we're the next generation coming up, that we have to play a role into making sure that our generation and the generation after us is going to be better, so that the people before us and the generation before us can look and see that change is happening and stuff is getting better.
Right, very good. Yeah, so I mean, listen, the concern is, you know, some people had like guilt remorse in the sense of, I want to be down. I want to protest. But hey, I'm not prepared to do that. And that's perfectly okay. It's not, oh, if you're not out there protesting, then you're whack. I don't think it's that at all. I think that being that enough is enough, we all have our own ways of coping with trauma and the feel or the drive to be somewhere based off of circumstances may differ for others. And that's perfectly okay. I think kind of like what Torian had already said that she's done is a perfect example of how you don't have to be on the ground in the trenches yelling Black Lives Matter while, you know, that's not what you feel comfortable with doing. I mean, clearly needing water, it was a big deal. There were a lot of construction workers that were out because they were boarding up a lot of the businesses that were in the vicinity of the White House that were secretly holding on. They had finished boarding up, but were pretending as if they were still working so they could just simply give out water and snacks to people that were walking by. Also, you know, I feel like, you know, what I saw and heard about on Swan Street, it was as if people opened up their homes like it was the Underground Railroad. You know, and the idea of like having to escape the police. And I mean, when we were running and walking for such a long time, like there were no ride shares available. Like they cut them off without any form of warning whatsoever. And they made you feel as if they would come. It's only 5 minutes away, 16 minutes away. You wait for 5 or 16 minutes and realize, oh my God, they're not coming. And I just see more and more police officers. I see helicopters flying over and coming in the direction of the White House. And at some point I said, something clearly is going on more than just simply, hey, this is curfew, you got to get out of here. And I definitely feel like people were trapped at some point. If you couldn't make it to one of the opened metro stations, you needed a Ace Boon Coon to come and pick you up. And that part of it was really challenging. And I'm just wanting to, you know, applaud the many people who opened their homes without fear. Because, of course, many people would say, oh, no, don't open up your house. They're going to come back and they're going to, you know, come and rob you. But at that point, somebody said, you know what, this is beyond what I allow my own idiosyncrasies to occur. Like, this is much more deeper than this. And it was literally, people were stashed in their homes as waiting for the police to leave until the wee hours of the morning. Like, if this is not a Harriet experience, I don't know what is. And it's funny because, you know, Bevan and I had taken a drive and went to the Harriet Tubman's mural. Bevan was like, Reese, we gotta go to the mural, it's on our way back home. And just in doing that, it was like, you know, so prolific to just even see that that mural of her reaching her hand out. And I think the bigger thing is that there are so many people who are reaching their hand out. And to Torian's point, there were many of people who were clearly a variation of race that were loud and proud Black Lives Matter. I mean, you would be like, well, whose fight is this? I'm glad y'all here. I mean, they got more signs. I ain't had no damn sign, but they got signs out. I don't know how fast they made these arts and crafts, Etsy, DIY type situations, but they out here, Slim, for real, whole time. And I mean, it was great to see it. I mean, there are white men that came by, talked to the police right in front of us and said, hey, there are children over there. I'm gonna need for y'all to calm down, like talking to the police. And it was clear, not all the police officers that were out really, like some people are just literally doing their job. Just like Trap, you said, hey, I'm of a certain age and I need to maintain, you know, I done did my freedom riding in that capacity of being on the trenches. While others are like, this is my job, you know what I'm saying? But within your job, I don't think anybody is saying don't do your job. I think it's a matter of don't overdo your job. Don't take your job into your own hands and try to overly do this situation. And I think that is more of the problem. So let's move on. I don't know who all joined in terms of wanting to talk about Hey, all right, City Grits is up here in the building. All right, yes, indeed. Is anybody else want to talk about before I move on? Hey, Risha, about the desire to protest or the feeling surrounding not protesting from those who haven't already shared before I move on. Okay, I'm gonna move on. Won't he do it? Yeah, no, oh, Risha, you want to say something? Oh, you just laughing. Okay, cool.
No, my computer, like, I'm just a computer slow, literate. Like, I'm getting there in time. It will come. In terms of, like, protesting, I disagree with what you all said. I was in here under Moto Z3, my phone, again, technology. But I agree with everything you guys were saying, that you have to do what works best for you. I don't think the expectation or the onus is on us right now, so anything we do is great. It is on other people. It is on white people. It is on people that are having issues with us. I had a coworker apologize to me for being black, and I'm like, my blackness is not the issue. The issue is...
What happened to your sound, kid?
Oh, man, hold on. Yeah.
We lost your sound. Devin. She doesn't
know. And I know she got a great response for that one. I want to hear that.
I know.
Let me try to send her a text on the fly. She's about to go in.
We lost the
conversation, kid. No, we can't hear you. We can't hear you.
No mic, no justice. Okay. No mic, no justice. Right. Oh, okay. So thanks, Devin, for sharing. I know she'll come back on with us to get that audio together. But for sure, you know, it being black is not something that we control. I don't think people realize that. Like, I don't think that's what it is. You know what I'm saying? I definitely feel as if, you know, we didn't wake up one day and said, oh yeah, I choose to be black. No, it's just like you know what I'm saying, this may be a touchy subject, but you don't necessarily choose your sex either. It's like your parent, there's genes that happen and then you are created and you're born. But I feel like, I don't know any one person. And I remember Senator Harris, Kamala Harris had stated, she said from her friends, her black male friends that are low income, to her friends that are Stanford and Harvard Yale graduates, they have all at some point in their life experienced some form of racial profiling, racial injustice, racial discrimination. And I feel that, you know, that is literally what things are. And because of time, I'm going to move on to Surviving America. I mean, videos of allies, as we call them, speaking out about their role in needing to step up and fight against the Karen mentality. And for those who are maybe unfamiliar with the Karen word, it's operation defined as someone who is normally of the white, who is of white descent. I'd heard that using the word Caucasian is offensive as well, but who is Caucasian? I heard that. I don't know how true it is, but I'm just being cognizant, just putting it out there, that they have a moment of entitlement and where they feel there's a knee-jerk reaction of, oh my God, you don't belong here. Oh my God, you don't have the authority to talk to me and put me in my place when I'm wrong or doing something. You don't have the call-out ability, right? We saw Karen mad, heavily mad with the bird observer. I mean, a black man that observes birds. I mean, what threat does that pose? I don't know. I don't know of one. But the black man in New York City who was like, hey, you need to leash your dog. She chose to insurrect a privilege, white privilege, by which knowing that he would then get in trouble and threaten him in that same regard of, I'm going to call the police, so back away. Just like there were the black boys who were in the Airbnb who purchased to be in that apartment complex building, and the white lady couldn't believe that that is how they ended up in there, that somehow they broke into the building. Somehow, even though it has codes, that they were just so ingenious that they chose to take all their lifetime to break the code to get into the building. The Karen moment of being on the phone, having a cookout at the park, and you feel inferior and wanting to call the police. The knee-jerk reaction to call 911. The knee-jerk reaction is the same jerk reaction that incited the killing of George Floyd, right? Now, here's the thing I'm concerned about. It's because the owner, one of the co-owners of the Cup store, was on television, CNN Today, and trying to redirect the attention from the fact that this same injustice that we experience on a regular basis is the same injustice that was displayed towards George Floyd, right? They said this one particular day, no owners were in the store, no upper management was in the store, so the only thing to do was to simply call the police. And if they've been in Minneapolis for all these years, which it seems that they have a true stake in Minneapolis, right? They should already know how the police already responds to African-American males. This is nothing new. But instead, they call the police. Come to find out, I remember by the time the phone was finished, we thought it was a check that was fraud. No, it was a $20 bill that supposedly was fraudulent and was not fraudulent. And instead of them taking ownership, to me, they were having another Devin's coming back in. They were having another Karen moment of let me get you out my store. This same business was happening in New York City at the bodegas. Let me get you out this store because I don't trust that you have enough resources to pay for whatever it is in this bodega. So these are these Karen style behaviors. So how do you all feel about surviving America and these Karen style behaviors or the Karen agenda?
Yeah, so, hey, everybody.
Hey, Risha.
Hey, so, those Karen issues, I feel like that is something that we need to work on both ends of the spectrum. If we're being honest, like with me, I grew up in Southeast D.C. I wasn't around white people until I got real grown. So I've had all of these images of what white people were like. All the stuff was put into my head. And the same thing happens for white folks. If you're not around black people, you're only gonna believe what you see and hear on TV. And it sucks for us that the media's terrible images about us, just like the looting. You know, everybody's like, oh no, those black people are tripping. That's not even majority of us. Like, that's not a good representation of who we are. So you have these Karens that see that and they believe that and they're brainwashed to believe that that's what it is, and it's really not. So some way or another, we have to figure out how we can all unite and get to know who each other really are. Like, white people and black people, we're different. However, we're the same. We do things exactly the same. I don't even go into detail, but we do things the same. We have to figure out a way to unite each other so that we can get all of these terrible stigmas out of the air.
I agree that there's propaganda that creates or perpetuates these stigmas about us. It creates this image of, you know, young black men in a lot of instances that we are all one certain way. But then more recently, and what we're seeing with a lot of the Karens is they are aware of that. And it's not that they have bought or continue to buy into that stereotype of black men. It's that in the case of Amy Copeland and Central Park, she was not at all buying into some stereotype that this man had asked her to put a leash on a dog was somehow a threat. You know, she absolutely knew that she had power and could call the police on him for almost as a punishment. Like, how dare you tell me what to do? Mm-hmm. And for me, that is another whole another whole issue. And I'm just glad that that came to the light because we know it. You know what I mean? We get the little side comments. They, you know, a lot of times they just say, I'm gonna call the police on something little, you know, silly. And it's just like, you know what? Even though I'm in the right, I'm gonna just walk away. Because I know once the police comes here, it's not your story against my story. It is whatever they say is what it is. You know what I mean? But I definitely agree on you know, the point that you made about the, you know, it really is propaganda. All the news media shows us one way, movies depict us one way, TV shows depict us one way. And it goes both ways, just like you said, where I grew up in Baltimore City. I went to city schools, you know, all through high school. And then I went to Howard, HBCU. So I didn't hit the white world until I was, you know, entering the professional environment. And I didn't even know how to interact with them, you know, on certain levels. And I could see some of them trying to engage me. They try to hit topics that were, you know, universals, talk sports, you know what I mean? And that kind
animals,
of thing.
Pets.
So yeah, but yeah. But very relevant point. I just want to point out that some of them know exactly what they're doing and wielding that power to keep us in check. And I just don't go for it. But I'm used to it. So it's just the norm. You know, I can survive because I grew up in it. I know what time it is. So my take on it.
Yeah, it sucks. I mean, that has to be a normal feeling to, you know, having to deal with white people a certain way. Like, I was telling my mom, like, I used to play out in Southern Maryland sometimes, and I would have to get out of there by a certain time, or I knew I was going to get pulled over. And I just got used to it. Like, if 1 o'clock came around and I wasn't gone, I was like, well, I already know I'm going to get pulled over. So, like, that's a shame that, and I'm a black woman. Like, it's a shame that I knew what was going to go on, and that should not be a normal thing. Under any circumstance, should I go into a white neighborhood, I'm driving, and I'm scared to make a wrong turn and end up, you know, in the wrong person's house on accident, and they shoot me. Like, why is that a normal feeling that I have? It's just so much.
Yeah, I mean, Risha, thank you for sharing. I think it's, so on one hand, it's called being aware of your surroundings. And then the underlying concern is, why must I be so aware of my surroundings? Like, just like there's an already unmentioned thought process, when you go in certain parts in Virginia, you need to slow down or you will be pulled over. And you know, unless you got cashes in the car with you so you can use it as an excuse, they're gonna lock you up, okay? And for those who don't know, cashes is my dog. And, or if you go in certain parts outside of the vicinity of Atlanta, it's racist as a mug. Just like, you know, I had said before, you know, you talk about the South, the Middle, and the North. The South is just blatant racism. You know they don't like your ass, okay? While in the Middle, we in the Middle. I know technically we below the Mason-Dixon line, but I consider us to kind of be like the middle cohort. It's like you kind of don't really know. You know, you kind of really don't really know. You kind of feel something, but you don't know. While if you go up north, you don't know a damn thing. And they can't stand your ass worth nothing. And you'll see it. You ever be to Boston? Boston is extremely, like, it's an aura. Like, I saw my own brother. My brother attended MIT, you know. He was the only African-American male to graduate with a 4.8 GPA. At MIT when he went there. He was in a newspaper. That was a huge deal. They've never even seen as many people as Harvard's right across the street from MIT. But Harvard is nowhere near as difficult as MIT is. And it was something they have never seen before. A black male be killing it in this game. You know, it was nothing that you saw. But I'll never forget going to Boston and making sure that I always visited my brother because that environment changed him. I know it. I can tell my brother has changed from being in that racist environment. And it's not, you know, we all have experienced it in some regard. And if you are black and never experienced it, God bless you. God bless you. You know, that's like, what is it, Trina, just coming out of her mouth recently talking about she has her license and registration and you black people are animals. Bitch, you black too. Candace Owens. It's a disgrace to me that I see these black people acting like this and protesting. What's the need to protest? You bitch, you black too. Be out there. They don't care if you who you are. At the end of the day, the senator got pepper sprayed of his own. The senator of the state got pepper sprayed by his own police officers. So the point is that people do not care. It's almost inevitable. There's no logic behind it. And
it's getting nasty. The military is like you're fighting your family. You're on one side if you're military or you're police. Meanwhile, your family member, you know, is across from you protesting. It's just nasty. It's disgusting. Policing is a whole. That's what I'm talking about. Is disgusting. Not the protesting and everything else, but how they're handling and how they're doing the policing and bringing in the military with a lot of these things.
You know what? I'm sorry. You can go ahead.
Yeah, it was just something quick. That also broke me to something. It was just like, when we see stuff like this and when we see all this stuff, it made me sit back and think about the time. Like, it's just crazy. Like, I'm not that old at all. And I've even experienced the racial profiling because I'm black or I might dress a certain way or I might wear a certain thing. People are immediately offended. People immediately feel stuff that I'm up to no good. Me and my friends, for example, we went to a mall where it wasn't like the population of the mall, which is basically all non-blacks, all Caucasian, all people like that. So when they see people like us walk in there, that's not a usual thing. And so once they saw us, they immediately were like, I literally saw people just staring at me because I used to wear a durag. I used to wear a durag in public. I stopped wearing it now, but I used to wear a durag in public. I had people literally just staring at me because of what I wore. And like, we would go in and out of stores and we literally got stopped because one store called the police on us because they said that we stole something. When in reality, we told a store worker said they would hold it until we were going to the front. And since they didn't see us necessarily, since they seen it in our hands and the cameras and it wasn't there, they immediately assumed that we stole it. And then it's just crazy to see, like, we had receipts and everything to show that we paid for that stuff, and yet we were still told that we were banned from the mall and they couldn't show us the footage or anything like that. If they showed us the footage, they would immediately have to call our parents and write us up, but basically give us a charge, put us in juvie and stuff like that. But it's just like, dude, I knew my rights from the jump. The minute he approached me, I already knew my rights. I already knew him approaching us for stuff that we didn't do and he had to cease to prove that we didn't do it. It was already wrong, and it was already based off the fact that this was a mall that was normally occupied by white people, and since we were black and we looked different, we were literally racially profiled. But it just goes to show, like, no matter who you are, where you are, or what the situation is, you can experience that at any time. So if you haven't experienced it, as we already mentioned, you're blessed to be, God bless you. And I just hope that this stuff like this, I hope like these protests can stop stuff like this, basically. Like us coming together and us realizing that stuff like this is wrong can stop the prejudice and the murder.
I think that those of us that can say we haven't experienced it, I think they really just choose not to. And then they choose not to see it that way. They choose to explain it off, you know, some other way. And usually they've grown up somewhere else where, you know, they're just not tuned in to what's really going on and how they're really being perceived. But just some news. I thought that things would change as I got older. You know what I mean? Because when I was a young man, I definitely had the exact same similar story as Ty right there. When I started really driving, definitely was getting pulled over more heavily when I was younger. And the treatment when I got pulled over, you know, I'm outside the car, I'm in handcuffs, I'm waiting for whatever to happen. They don't pull me out the car nowadays. I still get pulled over, still get questioned, they check me out and so forth. But where I see it most often is just in the workplace. And I was talking with, actually I wasn't talking, I saw a friend that that wrote about it recently just because of all this stuff that's going on. And I could definitely relate. Now, he's a big dude, you know, like 6'4", just big black man, healthy dude. And he was telling his coworkers, like, you know, I see the concern in your eyes when I'm approaching the elevator and I catch it before I get on. And then you realize, oh, it's Rodney, it's safe. You know what I mean? Like, it's good. But you were concerned when you didn't recognize that big black figure coming towards you. You know what I mean? And I see it when I go into an interview room and I gotta make you feel at calm. I gotta ease everybody, you know, to put you at ease so that you give me a fair shot in this interview. So I gotta be on point with my information, but I also gotta be a little bit witty and have good interpersonal skills to put y'all at ease, you know? And then I deal with it just with my team. I had white subordinates. Sexy Chief was a white boy, he worked for me. But time and time again, whenever we go into meetings, everyone is assuming that he's my boss. You know what I mean? And it just caused, and I try to ignore it, and they would correct people. You know what I mean? They would know, you know, I gotta lean on Bert to, you know, say XYZ because he's my supervisor. But then we have times when they're written communications. And I remember once he deferred to me on an issue, and I told them what our stance was, this, that, the other. They took the response that I gave, the explanation I gave, just kind of threw it out the window and went with what was the erroneous information my employee gave them first. And so I ended up having to ask the questions for it, you know, the wrong information that ultimately went out in the final report, but it should have never happened because it was clear that I was giving them new information as his supervisor, but that person couldn't fathom that I was the boss. You know what I mean? And that's where we see it. And that's why I'm hoping that that this moment won't just translate into policing, because there's that level there where we go back to the propaganda, where I think a lot of those police officers, they grew up, yeah, some of them may have been bullied or whatever, but most of them, I think, they've been watching them same movies. They saw Boys in the Hood, Menace to Society, Juice, you know what I mean? They've seen the Nino Brown characters. They watched the news and just saw us as criminals locked up. We always doing this crime, that crime, whatever. And then they became police officers. And now they're police in an area where they don't live, so they don't know any of the people. They are just like us, where their first interaction with black folks was on the job, but their job is a police officer. And that's a whole, you know, that's a whole different, you know, ball game. Whereas my job, yeah, I got to talk to people and work out issues, but their job is to police. And that's how you end up seeing a lot of the situations that we're seeing. Doesn't excuse it, you know what I mean? Because especially in this case where we're looking at with George Floyd, particularly heinous when you're sitting on a man's neck, knee on his neck for that long, plenty of opportunity to stop, but just to give an example of how somebody could get into that mindset and be brainwashed into thinking that all of these people are this much of a threat. Like, you gotta think somebody is almost a superhuman to still be a threat while they're handcuffed. And I'm not even just talking only about George Floyd in that situation. That's because it happens numerous times where there's black men still being held down when they're handcuffed, which is just, you know, crazy. But
yeah, absolutely. It's definitely crazy. Bevan, I know you were trying to say something.
I just wanted to just give a quick interjection as to the Karens and the Kurtz of the world. I feel that the way we have to deal with them is they feel emboldened because a lot of our sisters and brothers, and myself included, I can't lie, we go to work with them and we code switch. And we put on the white. Hey, how you doing, Bill? Yeah, what is it that you need? And we skate around all of that BS that they do in the workplace instead of checking them as, look, you're not doing this. And they just feel like everybody that they encounter is going to skate around them. So dealing with the Karens of the world and the Kurtz of the world means no, cut it off at work. If my boss asks to touch my head one more time, I'm going to ask to chop off his fingers.
Like, what are you going to do? Like, no, we're not doing that. We're not doing this anymore. I'm not going to give you the authority to feel like you can talk to me like this at work, and I take it because this is my job, this is my bread and butter. And then you go out in the world and it's, oh, I talk to Bevan like this at work all the time, and I'm going to talk to you like this because you don't belong here. And Jamal going to be like, nah. And then you going to call the police on him. So I feel like just as a community, we have to kind of cut out some of the bullshittery that we do, you know, around non-blacks.
Like, I take it.
give them be true to you. Give them who you are. Like, you know what I'm saying? You have the skills, you have the brains, you have the knowledge to accomplish anything. You obviously got it to get into that position. So don't downplay yourself by having to put on. Like, I guess that's one good thing about working from home. I'm not in the office with you, so I'm not putting on at all. You getting it because I'm at home and I'm comfortable. And you need me right now, so you're not going to fire me.
So. It takes courage. And because of that last point you just made, you need me right now and you're not going to fire me. That's you in that situation. And like on Monday, I shared a story of a police stop with my whole division because my top lady went into talking about the protests and so forth. And they were talking about it as if it happens over there with those people and some segment that they don't know. So I was like, nah, I'm gonna bring it home for you all. And I said, I don't share these stories with you because just like the news, I don't want you all questioning, well, what did I do to put myself in this situation and looking at me differently. And then that kind of, you know, weakening the prospects for me to move on and do other things in my career. But then I was just like, well, at this point, I'm where I'm at, and you got your opinions of me because I've been here for years, and it's either going to change or it's not. And I went on here to share my story. But it's mainly because I'm at a point where I don't got nothing to lose. But yeah. Being your true self, we switch up because we know being our true selves is often not acceptable in the office and detrimental to our careers, and it's a sacrifice. I agree with what you're saying. I definitely do. Like that's a contributing factor to the issue where they think they can talk to people because, you know, the nice guy at the office feels just like, well, we ain't all like that, bitch. You know what I mean? Like, catch me after hours. Dinner. It's a different story too.
Catch me at 4:31, huh? Catch me at 4:31.
But so Sissy said you can draw a straight line and slave from slave patrols to modern day police departments is systemic. The current educational system contributes to the why we aren't able to always be our authentic selves. It's systemic. And this is absolutely right. It's systemic. It's generation. It was trained. It's almost embedded into the membrane of the makeup of how people move. It's literally.
Absolutely.
And
I was going to say, not to interrupt Reese. I remember going to work. My mother worked in the federal government, and she would answer the phone, and I'd be like, why are you talking like a white lady? And she was like, oh, hush, girl, I ain't talking like, no, but you are, because when you get home and you get on the phone with such and such and so, you're not using that same voice. Like, and I'm pretty sure my grandmother did it. I'm pretty sure her mother did it. I am 100% confident that it trickled down to kind of, and I just call it watering yourself down, because I am very flavorful. I am not just salt and pepper, sis. So you're going to get this Nature Seasons, Lawry's, Morton Season, all of them.
Come on, cuz. Yeah, like, I literally, one of my students is on right now, not to call her out, Sierra, is on. And I know for a fact that in school, we would sometimes tell our students, you guys got a code switch. And now that I'm thinking about it in the perspective of how you're saying it, it's like, no, they need, I don't think that's what we need to tell them. We just need to tell them come professionally. Like, yep. don't code switch in terms of who you are and how you operate. Mm-hmm. Just know what's professional and what's not professional within your scope of ethnicity and your culture. That is
and I was gonna add that too, just make sure that you know the difference between switching your personality entirely and changing up who you are and speaking professionally. Because I remember when I was transitioning from like middle school to high school, 9th and 10th grade, I was always a student that was like that didn't necessarily have an accent. I normally spoke professionally. Like that was just how I spoke. I normally used I didn't have a slang to how I talk normally. And everybody used to always think that I was speaking white or stuff like that. It was just like, mm-hmm. I'm still me. I still have my personality. Mm-hmm. It's just my word choice is more of it's more professional, especially when I'm in places like school, when I'm in an interview or stuff like that. So that way, when I do have this, when I am in a professional setting, being professional is me normally. I know I can laugh and joke, but normally being professional is just who I am. So when I get into a professional setting, I'm more professional than, not more professional, I'm used to it. So one thing I would say is make sure that you know the difference between being professional and using a professional and use like a different word choice versus switching your entire personality to try to fit something that you're not.
And I don't think that it's necessarily I don't think that you're switching your entire personality. I think that you are just, when we go into these professional offices, you have to acclimate to the temperature of the office. That's just it. If I'm coming into work on a day where home wasn't good and they're getting Bevin, they already know it's up. Bevin's having a bad day. Nobody talks to her. Nah, it's not that. I'm not going to come in and I check them like, no, it's not that. I just didn't have time to kiki and cuckoo with you this morning. I needed to come in and get to business. Right. It has nothing to do with my professionalism. It has nothing to do with my attitude. I just don't have time to play with you.
Right.
That's all. So we got to stop playing with that.
Oh, right. And so one of the things I wanted to bring to attention, because IAG is about independent artist goals, and as you all may know or may not know, I'm in love with Brass Tracks. And they are a white group. They are known they are the producers of No Problems for Chance the Rapper. And I thought this is an example of changing the rhetoric, speaking out against what you know is white privilege and is not okay. And I thought it was hilarious. You know, obviously they have people who find it comical while others that are white that they have recordings of, they are very upset. But they said, if you're a white artist who's recorded with me in the past and you haven't spoken up on what's going on right now, I'm leaking your untuned dry vocal stems by the end of the week. Good luck. And so they also said, somebody else just wanted to come in.
That's funny.
They also said, this may seem funny, but for real, 7 years of sessions around the world under my belt and full hard drive backups, make your voice heard or I will in another way. And the reason why I chose to share that was primarily because of the fact that those are the stances that are necessary to be made, right? Because at the end of the day, here we have it, it's only the white people that can effectively call out the white people, right? Like, we've done our calling out as best and as much as we possibly can, right? I think that goes without saying. And I found this hilarious because it's kind of like, your voice will be heard one way or the other, right? And if it's the other, get ready to be heard. And so, of course, people were like, well, I hope that you, you get multiple lawsuits. I mean, I guarantee you they own the rights to record anyway. So there's limited lawsuitization that can transpire to begin with. But I just thought that was a chuckle I wanted to share to break the monotony of the
I didn't mean to cut you off real quick. I just wanted to say, like, another thing added on to what you said about, like, we only happen to be heard through white people. I feel as though nowadays we see more and more white people speaking up, and that's a good thing. But I feel as though we also seeing people, white people speak up just to be seen. Like you see, we see more and more white people speaking up, not because they feel for it, just because they want their, like, what's the saying? Like 15 minutes of fame. And they necessarily, like, they don't care for us. They just say something just for, like, everybody to look at them because they're white and they're standing up for it. So, and it's crazy because, like, I wish the same attention that they got, we got, but it's crazy because the only reason the media even turns an eye at them is because of their skin color and the fact that they're standing up for something that's that you normally wouldn't see.
Absolutely. And so that is why you have to play the cards the right way by simply using them as the forefront attackees. You understand what I'm saying? Like, you kind of have to flip the script. We got to use some form of ingenuity for whatever reason. And to be honest, a white person coming out and speaking about my black fans or supporting them or what have you, to be honest, they still going to get in trouble. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's plenty, as much as black people like, yes, white person, there are plenty of other white people that are like, you're canceled. Look at what they did in Nickelodeon, all because they simply shared, we're taking a moment in silence and support and remembrance of George Floyd. You know, like, white women, you know,
they will bounce back easily. Just someone says no, somebody as quickly will say yes, just based off of a lot of the privileges that they have. But the one thing that's just getting me is with the white ally thing is I've heard a lot of the sister terms used, and I'm just not there yet of that level of love. I get, you know, you want to be a white ally, you want to support, but that level of a brother, sister, hear that.
You're not feeling the white sisters? You're not feeling your white sisters?
it's being thrown around rather loosely. I don't feel like that comfort level is across the board to where that should be used. But that's regardless of my point of white allies and like what we want, what a black community want from them. And the way I feel right now is just like, I don't need your support pat on the back. I don't need your comforting email or anything like that. I don't need it. I need you to tell your family members. I need you to talk to them. I need you to tell them that when they're wrong, I need you to speak up. I need y'all to have family meetings to talk about what y'all need to be doing as a family to end the injustices and be more sensitive to people's skin colors. And also, you know, just be more for the black community than just a pat on the back or I support you because I just posted Black Lives Matter on my page. I don't need that right now. I don't need that. I don't need that at all, actually. But I need you to talk, you to have family meetings and talk about some of the things that you've done as a family and how you can spread forward, you know, because even in our own family, I need to speak up when I know that we use race loosely and we make jokes loosely about other races. That ain't right. I don't care if you old, that ain't right. Like, so it's just like, it needs to be all the way around, but from white people right now, you need to have those family meetings. That's how. Right.
I just had that same thought as well, and I'm going to make this comment and then move on to the next part. Like, I had to correct something that I saw someone of a younger age that's around 9 years old do. And I said, no, we can't say that. It was a driver. His name was Jose. The response was, he looks like a Jose. I said, oh, no. You can't say that. You can't say that because, see, we're literally repeating the same thing we're supposedly fighting for. We have got to stop it within us. If you say, oh, they moved into this house and there's a bunch of people in this home, well, listen, let's look at the positive. At least they know how to work together, something that most African-Americans don't know how to do. Can't do it if it was slapping them in their face. It takes so much effort for that to happen. I mean, period, right? Just like, I know my grandmother, rest her soul, she would say, Well, the Orientals. No, Grandma. No, ma'am. Stop what you're doing, Slim. No, that's wrong. Right? So as Torin is saying, we have these same prejudices within us as well. And it's unfair to us it's unfair for us to want someone else to stop what they're doing while we still perpetuating it ourselves. It's just not okay. Even if it's a different story, we're not.
You know what, Reese?
It's
a difference between saying some off-kilter comment about somebody's race as opposed to what they doing. Yeah. It's just a difference. Like the respect for my human life, the respect for my Black life is not there. Yeah, I may say, oh, look at Esmeralda out there. But it's not a thing of I don't respect her. I'm not going to go out here and spit in her face and F you, Esmeralda, get out of my country. You don't belong here.
I'm in agreement. But I'm still saying the inception. What I'm saying is, I just said they're not being killed. I acknowledge that 100%. But I'm also trying.
They're not being killed and they're not being disrespected in the same manner. It's different. But it's
still disrespect.
And we'll still hire a Chinese person. We'll shop at their stores. We'll ride with the Chinese person.
Exactly.
You know, we'll joke about them making that stuff. We'll hire Jose. We'll work with whoever. So there's a big difference between making racially sensitive jokes versus, you know, really, really having racist views towards somebody. There's a huge difference. And we can't get to a point where we're so politically correct and so concerned about being politically correct that we can't joke around with each other. Because, if those same kind of jokes, I say them straight to my white boys' faces, you know what I'm saying, and to Jose's face and whoever, because we're joking. And we're playing around. And we do that when they're not around. We do that when they're around. But there is respect because I bring them in my house. I sit there, I break bread with them. I hire them if I'm a hiring manager, if they you know, qualify, I think they can do it. But they have an outlook on us like we're not as qualified simply because they see our brown skin. When they're talking about, I wouldn't hire no N-word, they mean that, you know what I mean? And it impacts where we can live, where we work, the promotions we get, and whether we live or die when we interact with the police. There's a huge difference. And I can't subscribe to being politically correct everywhere we go because that takes away a little bit of the fun and spice in life. We joke about shit.
The spice of life, but it also, I feel like it's a slippery slope because if there are spaces where it's definitely like in the Black family to joke. Number one, we joke and Jones on each other. Like, I'm gonna come from my cousin, I'm gonna come from my brother. It's like a love language, basically. But I feel like if there's a space of offense that someone takes and they address it, or if you can just see it on them, then I think there's kind of like, okay, you need to cut that down, slow that down. Because it is like, so both are kind of, even though it's joking, even though it's playing, both are from a place of ignorance. Like, one is joking, like, okay, I'm just being ignorant, I'm joking with you. One is ignorant, I'm not joking with you. My intention is to hurt you and to, like, genocide your people. Like, I don't want your people here.
I'm going to have to agree with that. I'm new to this call, you guys. I'm Mercedes. Hi, everyone. I just have to say what she said is very valid because sometimes we make jokes like, stop acting like a Jew. You guys ever hear that? And I had a boss that was a Jew, and I made that joke. And for him, it wasn't a joke. It was the complete different conversation I had to have with him to understand. Like, when I say those things, it triggers a different, like, feeling that I don't know. Right. I don't know what he feels. I don't know how people treated him when he was younger. Granted, this man is older. He's in, like, his 70s, and I'm like, yo, stop being a Jew. And automatically it was like, end of conversation, I'm going to check you on this. This is not funny. For us, it's a joke. Like, you're collecting pennies and dimes. Like, just relax for a second. We're joking. But for them, it's different because us telling them stop acting like a Jew, they were told they can't be Jews. It hits in a different spot. So I'm going to have to agree with what she said. Like, some things are a joke for us and some things are not. What we just have to do is, like, don't make those kind of jokes. It doesn't have to be those kind of jokes. It could be different. We can laugh about different things that doesn't attack our personal, like, triggers, because people get triggered easily. So I just had to put that in there. Like, I agree with you.
Thanks for sharing, ladies. For sure. And I think we feel like I want to move us a little bit forward because of time. Everybody is kind of getting to that point. I want to talk about the buy black. That's an inside joke for us IAGers, but, you know, the thought process behind buying black now kind of has a resurgence. And we talked about early on about the Blackout Tuesday and kind of like the misrepresentation that transpired and the miscommunication surrounding what Blackout Tuesday was. And then for those who haven't yet understood it, the idea was that there were two black women who were in the music industry that said, let's not provide opportunities for the white execs at these music labels and wherever entertainment-wise to gain profit off of us this one day. Let's stop what we're doing. Let's not do any streams. Let's not do anything that would rejuvenate some form of wealth for them. Because in most instances, a lot of artists are stripped of monies because they have so many other people they have to pay. And those people are normally executives, managers, and label heads, and everybody alike. So the idea was, hey, we're going to go black and then focus on what's most important. And then for those who weren't here at the beginning of the conversation, Bevan had talked about, let's talk about voting rights. Let's talk about where you can participate in things. What Ty was saying, let's funnel that stuff out and focus on, like, what's really happening, where the protesters might need assistance, medical assistance, and whatsoever. I know I purposely chose to black out in solidarity. You know, I have pictures. I posted them in my stories, but I didn't choose to capitalize on the pictures that I already have just solely to kind of make it about, oh, yes, Sharice Jones was down here, you know, and then somehow this song, I'm going to put my picture of me fighting to a new song I just put out to promote myself. And I think that is what the idea was. Stop the selfies, stop all this self-promotion, stop trying to, you know, make yourself seem like you are the freedom rider and you're not. And just post the facts, post the information that's out there. So one of the things that, and posting that I wanted to share with folks was this information surrounding buying black, right? I need to get out of this right here. And where to spend your money, right? And so this thought process was surrounding where we're spending our money. And yesterday I was starving for some pizza. Like, I really wanted some pizza. And I got the announcement from DoorDash at like 6:58 saying, hey, we're not delivering to your area anymore because officials have told us to not do so. Why is that? Because that correlates with the 7 p.m. curfew. However, the issue is I don't reside in Southeast D.C. I don't live in D.C. I live in Prince George's County. So we don't have a curfew, right? But still, I had to look through the list and say, where can I spend my money? This is the concern. These are a list of, although it doesn't include all of the businesses and restaurants, but many of us at some point in our life has frequented these places. Pizza, Little Caesars, Papa John's. We already knew Papa John's was canceled before, but they got the best garlic sauce ever. We knew they were canceled. Chick-fil-A, you know, White Castle, Carl's Jr., Taco Bell, Wendy's, Pizza Hut, Domino's, Waffle House, Buffalo Wild Wings, KFC, Krispy Kreme. Jesus, I don't know why Krispy Kreme. Krispy Kreme, Chili's, Jimmy John's, Cracker Barrel. We should have known Cracker, okay? These are the list of the places that literally do not support the ideals. And I know there was conversation I've had on Sidebar about people saying, well, what about the franchise owners of these businesses? And my thought behind that is, well, they still are contributing their dollars to the corporation. There's a franchise fee. Understand that. And then they still have to, there's a certain percentage of monies that still go to these restaurants, still go to these corporations. And so without us knowing it, we don't always honestly know where our dollar stretches, where it reaches, where it goes. So one of the concerns was, you know, this is a bigger problem. We need to organize this protest surrounding it. And I simply was just saying, like, listen, some people are just supposed to gather the information and share it with the masses. Then it's somebody else's job, whatever their talents are, to then corral how we will have some actionary steps with resolving these issues. But in this, I was like, you know, where is a Black pizza place at? And luckily, Hayes Amaze, as you guys may know, really dope drummer who's played for me a couple of times, talked to me, showed me about this place called DC Chai Pie. And during this time, I think they only been open for the last maybe 4 weeks or so, they have started to do deep dish style, Chicago style pizzas, and they're Black owned in the DMV. I thought that was amazing because, like, you know, I don't really know a lot of Black owned pizza places. I just don't. And, you know, a shout out to them for saying, you know what, here's what I love. Let me work on this and put this out here. So, you know, as much as we've had jokes about buying Black, we really do need to start buying Black. And I also feel in buying Black, our Black owners of these businesses need not to price gouge either. I think that's another
part. Sure, that's a great idea. Don't price gouge.
Yeah, because I feel like when they're a Black business, the reasons why sometimes they don't survive is prices are overly high. Then we got an issue of prices being high, inconsistencies. Y'all need to have consistent delivery of service. Then on top of that, it's a great customer service. You understand what I'm saying? Like, these are things that we have to make sure are right, so it's not a problem. And yes, I hear you in saying, well, you're not worried about price gouging when you go to Gucci. You right about that. But we need to find a place that, you know, for example, plenty of people wear Sierra Lynn's work of arts. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's other ways. And I think Killer Mike did an episode on Netflix before about, you know, how can we survive from waking up to going to bed off of Black-owned surpluses. And it was very difficult because our Black farmers kind of are not there, you know what I'm saying? But not to draw it out, but I want to, you know, bring this to head in terms of buy Black. What does buy Black mean to you all? And do you all agree with, twofold, do you all agree with buying Black?
Yes, 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 and yes, and more yes. I think that I have found my hairstylist, of course, is Black. My nail tech is Black.
Okay.
My tattoo artist is Black. I'm looking for someone that is making plus size clothing. Please be Black. Please be affordable. We have the resources in our community to where we don't need them. We just got to tap in. You got to tap in. And I'm sure it's out there. I just ain't yet to find it. I know I can't go to Target and get my clothes no more, but it is what it is. I mean, yes. What's wrong with supporting our community and building our community up to have some self-sustainability? Like, separate yourself. I'm not saying, you know, never again we using your stuff, but we use you because we want it to. It's not a need, sweetheart. We don't need you. We want you. You are I'm in the mood for some bland chicken today. I don't want Roman rooster.
Yeah, convenient.
Now,
I love Roman rooster. Roman rooster is Black owned. Let this one chime in.
All right.
So don't judge me already.
I'm sorry.
So I will say I work for a company that is owned by a white woman who has a Jewish husband. And I guess where I see the difference is, yes, I would love to just promote, you know, every Black business that was out there. But most of the people on this call can afford to do that. We can afford, because of our bank accounts, to search out whatever those businesses are to a degree. But at the end of the day, who is employed by the Targets? It's us. Who's employed by the Walmarts? It's us. So, yes, I would be hurting whomever that is that owns the Walmart, but whose livelihood is really affected by it? It's us, because 90% of the people that work for my company, and it is 500 people, of those 500, 400 of them are Black. And I will say my boss is slightly, you know, in the degree of understanding that we take care of our people. We give them, you know, $10 every day since COVID started to get lunch. We put $300 extra dollars in their bank account on top of what we pay them every 2 weeks. But I think a lot of the discussion has to go towards us as people, and that's like Black people. Like, we have to argue with more facts than we do emotions. Like, have we analyzed? Have we researched? Like, none of us would go into a dark room without turning on the light, right? Like, that just doesn't make sense. So I think in order for us to probably get through this storm, I'm going to wait the storm out and wait till the storm subsides and wait till the clouds move. And then my response can be maybe a little bit more impactive and maybe a little bit more empowered and maybe a little bit more effective to allow some sort of transformation. Because, you know, winds of emotion can hit my dad always used to say, the winds of emotion can hit, and a man with knowledge, his curtains won't move, because he has always been there, and he has been there through whatever fight this is, and his curtains aren't going to flutter because he's already been there. But I don't know. I know I can afford to function on just Black businesses, but most people in general, they aren't able to do that.
So the issue, if we build our businesses or build the things that we need to become a certain level of the Walmarts and the Targets and the whatevers, then we can afford to allow some of those things to come in at a cheaper cost. I'm not saying this is going to happen tomorrow. This is this is something we need to start, you know, building again from the ground up, because it's not like it wasn't already here.
You began with if, and for me, when does if begin?
If begins.
When does if
now.
Start? Okay.
Now. All right. If starts now.
All right.
So yeah, well, thank you for sharing. I didn't get your name. I don't want to not say your name effectively, but thanks for sharing.
It's Aisha.
Say it again.
Aisha.
Aisha. Okay. Of course. Say my name. Yeah.
Can I? Okay.
But anyway, what were you gonna say, Ty?
I was gonna say she made a point of that I wanted to address as well. When we, like, the fact that a lot of people who work at these places, yeah, it might be owned by a white person, but at the end of the day, when we say, for example, say, oh, I'm going to stop going to Target because of this, I'm going to stop going to this place because of this, there's a good chance that a large majority of Black people work at this store that was founded by a white person, that you're now you're now affecting when you decide that you're not going to buy there. And to answer your overall question, I do feel as though we can sustain ourselves off of Black-owned businesses only, but I will say, please treat it as if it's a normal business, because I feel as though a lot of people see a Black-owned business and they think, oh, I know that person. Oh, my friend, that's my sister's friend, so I know they're going to give me a discount. Don't think that when you immediately go into that person, because I just seen it happen a lot of times. People expect like a discount, or they expect a hookup just because they know that person, where so you're not taking my business seriously. That's like, I'm not going to say disrespectful. It's just like, you need to take my business seriously. And then when people hear that, and they hear that, oh, I can't get the discount, oh, I can't get the hookup, man, I'm not going to mess with you at all then. So that's why.
That's another, that's a topic that we can have for a whole nother show about people asking for discounts.
like in your community. Stop that. Don't ask me, pay me my rate, because you're not asking Wall and Sam for one. Were you taking your discount of Wall and Sam? Because when you go through the self checkout,
no discount. Yeah. I mean, I don't get a discount for musicians, you know what I'm saying?
Take a full price out of respect, and that's basically what I was saying. And then that's why a lot of reasons a lot of businesses fail is because I'm putting a lot of time and effort into this, and simply because you want a discount and you don't agree my original price, you're not going to even try to promote me, or you're not even going to try to help me get out there, help my message, or help whatever I'm spreading get to other people who will pay for that. You're just going to say, oh, I'm not going to mess with him. Or when somebody else said, or like even when somebody else, for example, somebody else might bring up your brand and be like, oh man, I'm about to get this. So they will literally go to that person and be like, no, I don't do that. He's not giving no discounts. He's going to charge you full price. And then that person went, no, I'm not trying to pay full price. I'm trying to get a discount. We need to realize that we need to treat Black-owned businesses the same way they were treating normal businesses. You expect them to pay, like, for example, if you go to the grocery store and you see something up there that's like $13, you're expecting to get there to pay $13 plus tax. Why do you expect your friend to give you like half off, like 30% off, simply because that you know them? It should be the same thing so these Black businesses can grow.
Right. So, you know, as Bevan has already stated, you know, we hear everyone's point. It's a safe space. It's valid. These conversations are literally, you know, branches to the full stem of the tree of life. And this is all that we have to deal with. That's like within our own community of things we got to deal with. I know my, you know, my little sis Empress is on here as well. And, you know, Empress is the person who ignited me to even do Like a Girl Summit. You know what I'm saying? Connecting all my friends that are doing things together, put them in one location, in one space. But, you know, Empress does hair. And because Empress, you know, technically doesn't have her hair license, and, you know, she's young, still, you know, she's now a rising senior, won't he do it?
But,
come on, you know, they ask for discounts from her all the time because she's young, you know, like, so, you know, it's the same philosophy, but I will say, you know, I think I've made a more concerted effort in trying to go to places that I know are Black-owned businesses, right? And this is not to say that every Black business is amazing. We're not, you know what I'm saying? Clearly, there's some bad apples, just like there's some bad apples, some atrocious apples with the police as well. Every person that's there doesn't represent the holistic component of everything. But I will say this, this is why we need to vote. We have to vote in a concerted effort to make sure that you're doing some part. Right? I understand we feel like voting doesn't work. There's still people at the end of the voting circumstance that changes your answers or what have you. But I know from Tuesday, many of us, I mean, I had my ballot, my absentee ballot mailed to me. Mercedes, you want to say something? Yeah. You did too?
I was saying me too. I had to do it on the second. So like a lot of us did get the mail. Like there's a lot of distractions causing us not to be able to vote. So like if you have that piece of paper in the mail, take that action, because that is the only action that is actually like rightfully yours. And you don't get beat up for it. You don't get killed for it. Also stand up for that. Go protest. Do what you need to do. But that letter in the mail is in the ballot. Make sure everyone votes. I don't know what county you're in. I don't know where you are in Maryland, DC, Virginia, Montgomery County. We just had it on the second. We all had to do it. I did my part. You guys make sure you do your part. Voting is a priority. I just have to put that out there.
Absolutely. It was a priority. What were we going to say, Trey? Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, I was going to mention it earlier, but I thought that the Blackout Tuesday hit on a bad day for Marylanders, because there would have been a lot more reminders of people with their stickers. I got mine, but I would have been reminded early in the day to do it. And I hate that it wasn't on my radar. I forgot. Somehow I saw the news. I was like, oh, snap. It is Voters Day. And that's one of just the negative impacts of that movement. But on the Buy Black, I'm a big believer in Black economic empowerment. and we need that. I do believe in voting, but I also believe that we need to position ourselves so that we can influence policy either way, no matter who is in office or who is in the seat, that we can get our lobbyists out there to push our agenda. And I think that's the piece that is missing from most of, you know, all of our movements, of in my lifetime, where, yeah, we talked earlier about the different roles. You got the people on the street that are protesting, the folks that are supporting them on the street, the folks that are funding those protests so that they can happen. But we don't have the organizers. Someone mentioned it a little bit earlier, but the organizers that then take that to the next step and you know, put our funding in a super PAC to fund lobbyists so that we can push our own agendas. Also with the Buying Black, we also got to think about, all of us have probably seen where nepotism plays a big factor in the workplace. And, you know, the mom hires the daughter or the niece or the uncle or the friend of whoever, and they're able to do that because they own the business. And a lot of times we're not in positions where we can do that. You know, I feel I have a little bit of guilt where I'm in a nice cushy job, some would say, in the government, but I can't bring my kids in. There's no guarantee that I'll be able to get them an internship or anything else because I'm at the mercy of other folks that, you know, that have that power. And so if I had my own business, I would be able to do that. Or even if I didn't have kids, I would be able to look at somebody coming up that I see was in this position. I was in those shoes some years ago, and I could see that they're deserving of opportunity and provide that opportunity for them. And we can't do that unless we own and have, you know, business owners out here that are running their own businesses. And Buying Black for me doesn't mean I'm not buying from anyone else. It means that I need to be conscious about where I spend my dollars and understand that spending my dollars with my people, helps my community, helps my family, my kids, and so forth. And be intentional about that, to spend that money and rotate it in a community. I love that we focus on certain services that we always go to Black people. We all have our Black, you know, barbers, hairdressers, and so forth, but also get that Black doctor, that Black dentist, that Black therapist. You know what I mean? Your HVAC, you need that service, make them Black. Everybody that services your stuff, you should seek out, you know, and find good ones. I'm not a proponent of supporting anybody that does bad business, not at all. But take the extra step to try to find them if you can. And definitely the sister Aisha made some very great points. As far as like the list, well, she didn't mention this, but for me, the list of you know, where not to spend your money, you gotta be very careful with that. And for the reasons that she and Todd talked about, where a lot of those businesses, franchises are owned by Black folks in some cases. Some cases they're owned by white folks, but they're in our community and they're hiring our kids, you know? And we gotta be mindful of that and not, you know, not just automatically or be too quick to jump towards, I'm not supporting this company anymore because the one a-hole person at the top did X, Y, Z. And I also think that there's a difference between being a Trump supporter and being a conservative. Some of my ideas and values and stuff are lean on the conservative side. I'm not a Republican at all, for folks that don't know me, but not all of my ideas are liberal in nature. So,
know what y'all have going over there, so. Maybe people should, for the benefit of your job. But I definitely agree.
2020 on the back of that.
Dumbass. So I definitely agree with, like, there's ways in which you have to do it, but I feel like the first step is acknowledgement and awareness. And so you got to start somewhere, right? So everybody's way of fighting the fight might be different, so long as they fighting something. You know what I'm saying? You're just not on the sidelines, just watching stuff go by, complaining when you feel like complaining. You're not, what are you doing to help contribute something? You know, because our Black dollar is majorly powerful. And if you notice how Reebok came out and said, if it wasn't for the Black buyer, we would not be where we are as a company. those are companies that we need to stick with. I know Bevan has said, let me go find me some Princess Cut. What are them joints called?
Princesses. Because I can't do the classics.
Let me find a classic or whatever. You know what I'm saying? Let me re-bock myself up, okay? Let me step out there.
Hey, before we close out, can I just ask? I want to go back. I want to put the sister on the spot. I didn't get name, but the one that was talking about the coworker that apologized to her for being black.
Oh,
definitely. I'm curious. This is running through my mind.
It was not a thrilling story. I was like, I just feel like in those situations, we have three options. We can either ignore them. We can either address them passively, like, thank you. That's not what I'm gonna do. Or you can, three, explain out the situation. Just like with all people now asking, well, what should we do to help? How do we make the process better for you? How do we heal your sorrow of blackness? It's like, bruh, I'm not sad for being black at all. So I just ignored him because on that day, I really didn't feel like explaining that. Why are you sad today versus when Breonna died versus when Ahmaud died versus when Oscar died versus when, you know, the list just goes on and on. So that day I just didn't have the energy and I'm just like, I'm just going to ignore you to, you know, not read you right now because you probably are having an okay day. You probably feel like you're helping. And then I think there's also value in trying to know the intent of a person. And I know his intent wasn't to be malicious. Like, he really wanted to be helpful. Like, oh, I'm sorry you're black today. I know it's hard for black people. So silence.
Fair enough. Absolutely. And what was interesting today, you know, if you haven't recognized or had a chance to tap in, if you've chosen to kind of like give yourself a breather from social media or from, you know, the CNN news junket type circuit experiences, we finally have a charge. All four of the officers were charged. And so we have second degree murder for Chef, whatever his name is, Siobhan, Officer, I don't know what his name is. I'm not going to hold you. But everybody has second degree of something, right? Aiding and abetting. And the part that really blew me is once I saw the picture of all four of them, and I said, I know this man ain't black. I know he's not black. But then I think about this, the other six officers, one of them's white, but all five of them are black, who pulled out and tased the two college students from Spelman and Morehouse in Atlanta.
But see, sometimes you're not black, you blue.
You absolutely right, cuz. And here's the thing that's really interesting. Here it is in Atlanta, you have Mayor Keisha, a black woman, who said, not only are you guys going to be fired immediately, you guys will be charged immediately. While here it was, it had to literally take the entire world, the entire United States of America, to be united as best as they could, to rally, to protest, to show their outrage in how the blue is in a whole nother category in of itself. And, you know, I kind of felt a little bit of relief, but then I said, oh, no, don't get too relieved. We got to get convictions because we now have charges. Won't God do it? But the convictions is what sticks. And many of times people can get charged all day long, but never convicted.
We need to open up. We need to make sure Breonna Taylor gets some justice. We got some other, Ahmaud Arbery. We need to make sure that everybody needs to get it.
Just lock them up, honey, and let them be in general population. Okay, yeah. Because you know, that is, it's like, you know.
Lock them up in New York where you clearly don't get a trial for a long time and you just be in jail to be in jail.
Like at Rikers. Rikers Island, just sitting. You know what I'm saying? And I
you just
and
sit.
I felt but then I said, man, our job is still not finished, right? Because we have all of these people. Black, you would think George Floyd would be the last person. No. There's somebody dying every still to this day, dying. Like, to this day, still dying, Slim. Like, I saw a clip of a black officer put his knee on somebody's neck in Baltimore. And it was another officer that pulled his knee, a white officer that pulled his knee off of him. Okay, like, stop being Uncle Tom, Slim. Like, what is you doing? Like, you know,
this video was the police officer that got on the white cop. That was the best video. But
the black lady that was in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
She was like, what is you doing? Like, she went real auntie on him for sure. You were trying to say something?
Yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah. So I will say my brother is a police officer. And he's very high up in the police in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. My dad would have probably rolled over in his grave to hear some of the comments that my brother had to say when I asked him about his take on, you know, just everything that's going on. And I asked my brother, you know, as a police officer, what do you think? And this was probably day two or three. And my brother said, well, what are you talking about? Who is George Floyd? And I said, wait a minute. Like, I gotta hold my black fist up a little bit higher for you, because you out here acting like a coon because you don't know what's going on. And he says, you know what? A lot of police officers remove themselves from any media and anything that goes on.
Okay, DJ Trev. I don't know where she went. I have nothing to do with that.
Absolutely. I think Aisha's there, but basically she's saying even in her own, I guess, family, there's divide, I believe blue. And then there's, I bleed, you know, black when it's convenient. And I feel
she told me the story early on when we had spoke previously, where he was just oblivious to the whole situation. And I believe she said that he said, oh, well, like, what did he do? And they were like, Paul, are you even my brother? Mm-hmm. What do you mean, what did he do?
Yeah, yikes.
Yeah.
A little rough. So with us concluding, thank you all for being a part of this town hall, even if it was just simply to listen. You know, thank you all for your time. You know, we went well beyond the time, but this was a very healthy dialogue. Next time, I would love to have more people participate and share their thoughts. I'm glad that we had young people on, as well as seasoned folks that just don't have salt and pepper.
Hey, I'm young. I don't know what you're talking about.
So we thank you all for coming.
He had that cup of noodle shirt on. He is young.
So this, you know, uncut, raw experience of IAG radio show, which is simply a platform for independent artists to share and showcase their artistry. And all of you all are artists in your own right. And we just promote that, and we just pray that you all stay safe. You know, have your temperature checks with yourself. Recognize that, you know, you're not for the BS. Sometimes it's like you gotta check yourself out from social media or from watching the news, just so that you have some form of sanity. You know, write down your thoughts if you can. Make sure you try to take showers if you feel up to it. You know, like, if you feel like eating, eat what you feel like eating. Don't beat yourself up. I think that we're missing the part.
The way you were messing up them biscuits the other day, you might want to reach
out. How you mess up the biscuit, though?
You were fucking up. I'm sorry. You were killing the biscuit.
How you...
Okay, I had a moment. I was just emotional. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, continue. I'm sorry. You say eat right. Don't eat whatever you want to eat.
Okay, so the person, A-Slim, I understand this is new, okay? I'm going to work on me too, okay? But sometimes you got to be okay with where you are at that moment and not beat yourself up for it. And I just think this is a time where we're all grieving and dealing with things that we've never dealt with on this type of level before. And I feel like the reason maybe all of this commotion is happening is because people were at home. There was no excuses for them to go anywhere. For those who allowed it to be in front of their face, it was right there in front of their face. It was undeniable. Also, you know, there are still plenty of people who are still dying from pneumonia or from COVID right now. And that part is very, very kind of crazy. It's like, it's a two-part, you know, pandemic. Being Black and then having COVID-19. Black, you know, 20 and then COVID-19. It's just inevitable, you know. And just keep fighting the fight. You know what I'm saying? If anybody else wants to say something to, like, have a lasting moment before we depart, please share it. But again, this is a, you know, IAG radio show, and we appreciate all of you.
I would like to say thank you for bringing me on. I've wanted to do this for so long, to be on a radio show or talk show, podcast, something like that, and get to express how I feel and express what's on my mind, because I don't really talk about it as much as I need to. And also, can I plug myself?
Go ahead, Ty. All
right. So, as she said in the beginning, I'm a part of the Central Music Program. I work with Deanna Hawkins with Beat Zone. Me and a group of my other friends as well, Samaria, my friend Bobby, my friend Jermaine, my friend David, and some other people as well who came in and out of the program. We made multiple songs on YouTube. You can look at stuff by typing in Essential Music or Beat Zone with the title. The last song that we created was called The American Dream. Beat Zone, The American Dream, where we address similar topics like this, how we're in America, and it's supposed to be like, and the way the Constitution and stuff like that is written, and it seems though it's only really, only white people get the stuff that's in the Constitution. So we come together, we address topics and our songs, stuff like that. We write music for a purpose. We write music for people who need to hear it, people who need to be informed. So again, like I said, if you want to hear it, Beat Zone, The American Dream, and through the channel that that song is posted on, you can find multiple of other music, multiple of other songs as well.
Awesome.
I'm going to plug Mercedes because I know she's not going to plug herself. She has a clothing line coming. It was before George Floyd. It was before COVID, called Silence Speaks Volume, SSV. So be on the lookout. She's muted. Girl, you mute. No, my hate. There you go.
I'm too used to muting myself with work. I don't even know how to mute the shit. I apologize. Pardon my language. But, you guys, so I did start off my clothing line personally on my own just because I wanted to design clothes and, like, I don't know, send a message, but just my own way. So with that being said, I actually partnered up with a whole bunch of group of people who are helping people who are hungry, who are in need, who are help. Like, we literally go to door, and at this very moment today, what we did was we fed 200 families today. Bevan, pardon me, I was still at work at 2 p.m., and I was still on the clock, but I left. And I went out and literally went to 200 homes. We gave them produce, we gave them soda, we gave them some chips, anything they needed, like deodorant, diapers. We went to each home and figured out exactly what they needed. Forget about SSV. I stopped that. We had shoes, we had clothes, we had deodorants, we had shampoo, we had food. Just knocking on doors like, hey, we have such and such. Do you need help? If you want it, it's right here. And literally more than 200 homes accepted it. So all I'm going to say is if you guys know people who need help, contact me. Meet with me. Bevan, I'm telling you this as well. We do this once a week, either every Wednesday. We can pick a Friday. We can pick a Saturday. I will come to your neighborhood with food and produce, with chips, with soda, anything like deodorant and diapers and shampoos and conditioners, whatever is needed at this very moment, we're going through a tough time. So forget my line, my clothing line. We actually just started helping out people who are in need. So if you guys know people, or if you guys know neighborhoods, if you guys want to go anywhere, you want me to meet you anywhere and literally hit a whole entire neighborhood, a whole apartment complex, call and text me. We will set it up. You want to have like a place to have kids who are like without parents or who are in gang members or whatever. Whoever needs help at this very moment, we're willing to offer it. So I'm here. Forget the clothing line, but like literally we're just here to help people because we are kind of in need and nobody's really helping anybody besides ourselves. We're communicating and we're uniting. And this is the time to step up. I'm not here to sell my clothing line. I'm literally offering free help. I don't need money from anyone. But if you have communities that need our assistance, that need our helps, that need food and meals and cleaning supplies, call me, text me, email me. I'm available. We have the products. We have people contributing to help us. If you need details, hit me up.
Hey, Mercedes, we have I have a resource where we can give you some things. So get my information from Bevan.
Okay.
We have way too much stuff, and we will give it away if necessary. Just let us know what you need. We have 13 hardware stores, so it's kind of limitless in what we can do.
Okay.
And I have a strong voice in what we give, so absolutely, like I'm here for it. And sorry about my phone.
You're good. I can still hear you. And the main focal point is we're communicating, we're hearing one another. So I hear you. And your help will be needed at some point, trust and believe.
I was also going to say, if you needed like any extra set of hands, I would be more than willing to help. I actually wanted to come around and help people during times like this when they needed it. But like, unfortunately, due to school and stuff like that, now the school is ending, I have time. But like,
we go to protest locations and drop off waters and juices and some bag of chips. If they need masks, we did have some masks. I ran out of them today, but literally we go to the protest locations and hand out waters and food and bags of chips, whatever they need at the moment. If we have it, we're giving it away. We do need extra set of hands. If you guys are able and capable to assist, by all means necessary, we'll accept it.
That's totally
all right.
Devin, do you want to talk about your directing and okay, well, Devin is a great playwriter. She can sing too. She's an independent artist.
No, I had to turn off mute. No. That's not what tonight is about. I'm just glad to be here and listen to everybody's stories. I appreciate you doing that, that's not even for me. That's not what it's about tonight. I'm just glad to be in the number, as my grandmother would say, and just have everybody expressing and sharing. So thank you for that.
Absolutely. You know, we still support our independent artists at any point that we
have. Another show.
And but we'll have you come back on for sure for another show specific about yourself. Empress, thank you for joining us. Empress is, a rising senior as well and is extremely talented. It's part of the business leaders. I think it's called Business Leaders of America, and they have a competition coming up, I think on Monday, things of that nature. Shout out to Risha, who's in Atlanta, who is in school for music, is a phenomenal drummer as well. So everybody on here is very talented, and we appreciate you. And for everyone that's been watching, thank you for watching and tuning in with us. You all have a beautiful rest of your day. And until later, IG, baby.
IG, baby.
How can I get a contact with you?
You guys, make sure we share our contact information, please. And thank you. We all need to share our contact information. Bevan, you're the only person I know.
We'll get you.
I will literally make you responsible to help me out with what I'm doing. And I'm going to
connect everybody. I'll give link. Okay. Everybody, we'll connect all the different dots. No worries.
Okay.
So before we conclude, everybody can just email IAG Radio Show your information there, and then we can disperse and connect that way. So I just put it in there for everybody to see. But we're out, man. DJ Trav rocking out.
You guys have a great night.
Shit.
Good night, everyone.
All right, good night.
Good night.
Trip?
You sat up. He walked out to his
plug me in, Scotty. Come on. Trip rocking out.
Trip, we'll hear another trip.
Leave Trip alone.
Well,
what I did.
We don't have music.
There it is.
Yeah.
So music is going to stop recording.
I'm going to press the.